Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. As we go through the book, there's basically only one thing we're talking about. And that is making a shift of identification from body to mind. I have pointed out from time to time that body, world, universe, all of the things that you are aware of, you are aware of with and in your mind. It is your mind that is conscious of it all, not your body. It is your mind which is conscious of your body and your home and your world. But you all identify with the body. Mind is ever present, isn't it? As long as you're conscious, it's present. But you give it little attention. You say, I use my mind, in the same way that you would say, I use my hands, as though it's one of many possessions, instead of the ground of your being. The fundamental of your conscious experience of being. Body and mind have both been present in your experience, but you have weighted your attention on the side of your body. There's a good reason. It's really a bad reason, but there's a reason you do this. And that is that when you got your bill of divorcement from the Father, when you said, Father, I'd rather see it my way, and you abandoned the Father's perspective consciously and conscientiously, by means of developing your own meanings for everything in your experience, you, as I've said before, lost your conscious experience of oneness with everything. You said, I'd rather see it myself. And you drew a boundary around yourself. And suddenly, all the rest of what you infinitely were became something different from you. Wow. Now, you look and the only thing that's you is the specific identification of you, which has always been, but it was part of the infinitude of you. But now it's all there is of you. And so you had to begin to redefine yourself. And your definition of yourself was based on, built around, this one little part of the infinitude of you that you call your body. So you equate yourself with the body. And if this equation is carried to its logical conclusion, you believe that when the body ceases to be alive, you cease to be alive. And so many of you, not that many of you here, but many of you in the world believe that from birth to death is all there is to you. That's how definite and binding your identification with body has become. Now, I'm reminding you that this other thing that's in your experience called your mind isn't just another thing. It is an unbounded and therefore infinite presence of mind, presence of conscious awareness in which body, world, and universe is going on. And I keep pointing you in the direction of going through your day, being more aware of yourself as mind, reminding yourself that you are the consciousness in which all conscious experience is occurring, so that you might have the opportunity of having that awareness trigger for you what you would call a reinterpretation of the daily events of your lives. Because depending upon what you're identifying yourself with, your experience of everything will be different. And you all deserve a different experience than the experience of bondage you're presently in. Last week, we spoke, or last time we were together, we spoke extensively about the body being a means of communication. It doesn't exist on its own for itself. It exists as a vehicle for the extension of communication, the extension of meaning, the extension of value, with a capital V. At the bottom line, it is the means of your engaging in acknowledging what is true about your brother, your sister, and everything that you see. It is the means you have for recognizing God in each and everything. That is its function. But when you get caught up in preoccupation with the body, you lose its function. You become distracted from extending the acknowledgement of what is real in each and everything. And you have moved into an attitude of self-defense, because as long as you have no contact with the infiniteness of you, you can only be in touch with the limits of you, the finiteness of you, and consequently your utter vulnerability to everything. So when you are identifying yourself with your body, you are engaged in defense. But you say, I don't feel like I'm engaged in defense. But the simple fact is that when you are preoccupied with yourself as a body and making it in the world as a body and earning respect as a body, and learning how to be in charge through force that can be brought to bear by your body, you are not engaged in connection. You are not engaged in extension. You are not engaged in the act of recognizing and acknowledging everything that is real in everything that you're looking at. You're preoccupied with self. If you're not engaged in inclusion of it all, but are engaged in being separate from it all, you are in a state of defendedness. It is that simple. Now, let's go to the book. We ended with the statements, joy is unified purpose, and unified purpose is only God's. When yours is unified, it is His. This means that you will never have, on your own, unified purpose. There's only one thing called unified purpose, and that is God being. And if your purpose is unified, it means there is nothing present blocking or interfering with God's purpose. You are being a transparency for God. So, when yours is unified, it is His. Interfere with His purpose, and you need salvation. Well, that's what's called the human condition. You have interfered with His purpose by having a purpose of your own, by having a purpose of wanting to be able to determine what everything is, to determine how you're going to deal with it, to determine how you're going to defend yourself, to determine how others better behave, and on and on. When you chose to be an authorizer, you chose to ignore the capital A author. And you have interfered in his authority. Now the fact is you can't interfere with God's authority. But when you try to insert an authority of your own between you and God's authority, you interfere absolutely with your capacity to experience the Father's authorship. You interfere absolutely with your ability to experience the source of your being, and therefore the reality of you. And, it says here, you need salvation. You have condemned yourself, but condemnation is not of God. Therefore, it is not true. No more are any of the results of your condemnation. What are the results of your condemnation? Sin, sickness, and death. They're not true. They're simply not true. When you see a brother as a body, you are condemning him because you have condemned yourself. In other words, you are seeing him in no larger a way than you are allowing yourself to see yourself. And if you are allowing yourself to see yourself in a larger way, you will automatically include your brother in that larger view. When you see a brother as a body, you are condemning him because you have condemned yourself. Yet, if all condemnation is unreal, and it must be unreal, since it is a form of attack, then it can have no results. But you know what? If you're identifying yourself as a body and someone else is identifying themselves as a body, and the two of you look at each other and see the other as a body, and you all agree to this illusion, you can have a pretty good knockdown, drag out, artificial fight. I say artificial because none of it is real. It's a fantasy that the two of you are playing out with each other. But it isn't real. And the consequences, the apparent consequences of it, cannot be real. And as a result, when one of you breaks the agreement to play this game of fantasy with each other, and one of you remembers the truth, instantaneous healing of the apparent results can occur. Why instantaneous? Because there never was an actual effect that has to be undone. And this is important to understand because it means that no matter what you might be suffering from at this moment, you can experience instantaneous relief without going through some process of healing. Continuing, do not allow yourselves to suffer from the results of what is not true. Free your minds from the belief that this is possible. In its complete impossibility, and your full awareness of its complete impossibility, lie your only hope for release. Remember that in order to break the sense that something impossible is possible, you have to shift from body identification to mind identification. Shifting your attention from the definition of yourself as a body to your conscious experience of being as the definition of you, and abiding there and observing everything from there. Again, in its complete impossibility, and your full awareness of its complete impossibility, lie your only hope for release. But what other hope would you want? Freedom from illusions lies only in not believing them. There is no attack as an actuality. But there is unlimited communication. But you won't shift into unlimited communication as long as you're identifying yourself as a body. There is no attack, but there is unlimited communication and therefore unlimited power and wholeness. Well, wholeness is a state of invulnerability. It's a state of being what God is being, right there where you are, with the awareness that it is God being what you are right there, with God's perspective. There is no vulnerability in that perspective. The power of wholeness is what? Extension. Using the body as a means of communication. Communication of what? Extension of what? The acknowledgement of what is true in what you're seeing. And how do you see what is true there? By abandoning your belief about what is there and asking within of the Father, what are you being there? What is the divine meaning of what I'm looking at? The power of wholeness is extension. Do not arrest your thought in this world, and you will open your mind to creation in God. Extension of the acknowledgement of what is real, which is another way of describing love, is something that will happen through the body. If on the way you become preoccupied with the body, the extension will be arrested. Your attention on that which you're seeing, what is real in, will be arrested, will be interrupted, because there's an attention being given to the body. Do not arrest your thought in this world or in this body. And what? You will open your mind to creation in God. You will open up your mind to the experience of the extension of the acknowledgement of what is real, and the joy of the experience of making that extension . And in that experience, you will find God revealed as your conscious experience of being. And because you will be introducing nothing extraneous to it, you will find yourself being the movement of creation. Let me put it this way. You will find yourself being with the movement of creation, and in being with it, without introducing anything extraneous to it, it will be all there is of you. It is in this way, and this way only, that you become co-creators with God. It's not an independent act you do along with God. It's the absence of independence that allows you to be absolutely at one with God, and therefore experiencing nothing but what God is being. In a way, this is what Paul is doing right now. So don't think that in doing it, you'll suddenly be swept into some nebulous, indescribable experience. What will happen will be that everything you engage in will be infinitely meaningful. And so here and now is the place to start. Do not arrest your thought in this world, and you will open your mind to creation in God. You will experience your body as what it is, not as what you had come to believe it to be. And you will experience your world as what it is, the kingdom of heaven, and not what you had come to believe it to be. The next section is entitled, The Body as Means or End. Attitudes toward the body are attitudes toward attack. Well, let me put it this way, because I know some of you are wondering what in the you know what that means. Attitudes toward the body are attitudes toward attack. If you have an attitude toward the body, your attention has been arrested. You're already preoccupied with something other than making the extension through communication of the acknowledgement of God in whatever it is you're looking at, the acknowledgement of the real capital M meaning of the thing that you're looking at. If you have an attitude toward the body, your attention has already been arrested. And therefore, you are in a defense mode, which is the flip side of saying attack mode. When you're in defense mode, you're defended against something. And just because you're preoccupied with the defense doesn't mean that the opponent isn't there as an integral part of your mindset. Because if the opponent weren't there, you wouldn't be thinking about defense. Oh, but I'm not thinking about attacking anybody. It doesn't matter. If you are busy calculating your defense, being preoccupied with your steps of defense, etc., even though you're thinking of no one in particular, everyone in general is the reason that you're engaged in preoccupation with defense. Again, attitudes toward the body are attitudes toward attack. The ego's definitions of everything are childish and always based on what it believes a thing is for. And of course, when you've gotten your bill of divorcement and said you'd rather see things your way, you have decided what a thing is for, you have adopted it, and you believe your definition. The ego's definitions of everything are childish and always based on what it believes a thing is for. Again, not what it believes a thing is, what a thing is for. This is because it is incapable of true generalizations and equates what it sees with the function it ascribes to it. It does not equate it with what it is. What your body is a means of communication. What creation your world is the kingdom of heaven, not a physical world and universe that you have defined. But of course, the ego has as its function not to see what it is, Because the predicate of it all was, Father, I'd rather see it my way, not the way it is. Continuing, to the ego, the body is to attack with. Equating you with the body, it teaches that you are to attack with, because this is what it believes. The body, then, is not the source of its own health. The body's condition lies solely in your interpretation of its function. Now, that's not true, but as long as you are in that mindset, that will be your experience. You see, when you're not in that mindset, you could say that the body is the source of its own health, because the body in itself is neutral, is benign. It has no function relative to itself. It only has function relative to the communication of love. Love being the recognition or acknowledgement of that which is real in each and everything. Continuing, the reason why definitions in terms of function are inferior is that they may well be inaccurate. And of course, any definition that has been applied to something that is different from what the Father is being there is an inaccurate definition. Functions are part of being, since they arise from it. But the relationship is not reciprocal. The whole does define the part, but the part does not define the whole, which is another way of saying, you are not God, but God is all there is of you. This is as true of knowledge as it is of perception. Now listen to this. The reason to know in part is to know entirely is because of the fundamental difference between knowledge and perception. And you could look at it this way. You can grasp the idea that to know in part is to know wholly, is illustrated in a hologram. Because if you cut a small part of a hologram away, you'll find that the whole picture that was in the entire hologram is present in the part. So, to know, and I would use a capital K there, to know in part is to know entirely. And the reason to know in part is to know entirely is because of the fundamental difference between knowledge and perception. In perception, the whole is built up of parts which can separate and reassemble in different constellations. Knowledge, or capital K knowing, never changes. So its constellation is permanent. And I would add, its constellation leaves nothing outside of it. It is all-inclusive. It is whole. The only areas in which part-whole relationships have any meaning are those in which change is possible. There is no difference between the whole and the part where change is impossible. The only place where change is apparently possible is from the frame of mind in which body identification predominates. And the only place where change is impossible is in the frame of reference where it is mind, the conscious experience of being, that identifies you or is your identity. If you want variableness, stay with body identification. If you want, let's say, permanent harmony, if you want forever stable experiences of being, identify with and as mind. It doesn't mean stability in which the movement of creation doesn't occur. It isn't God frozen, but it's God and nothing but God in constant movement, unchanging in nature, character, intent, or actuality. The movement of creation is unchangeably what it is. Knowledge never changes, so its constellation is permanent. Continuing from where we left off, the body exists in a world which seems to contain two voices which are fighting for its possession. Seems is the key word. In this perceived constellation, the body is regarded as capable of shifting its control from one to the other, making the concept of both health and sickness possible. Now, when it says here that the body is regarded as capable of shifting its control from one to the other, it means the same thing as you regard yourself as capable of shifting your attention from one to the other, from one voice to the other, making the concept of both health and sickness possible. There's where you get into change. That's where you get into fluctuation. Because you think you actually have a choice to think for yourself or yield to God. And when the going gets rough, you yield to God. And when things straighten up, you think for yourself again. And when you think for yourself again, you find things getting difficult and you arrive at a point where you have to decide to yield to God. And you know what I'm telling you? I'm telling you that this sense of self that thinks it can shift its attention from one to the other doesn't really exist except in your imagination. You haven't stopped being the Christ. You haven't stopped being the evidence of God. Continuing, the ego makes a fundamental confusion between means and ends, as it always does. Regarding the body as an end, the ego has no real use for it because it is not an end. You must have noticed an outstanding characteristic of every end that the ego has accepted as its own. When you have achieved it, it has not satisfied you. This is why the ego is forced to shift from one end to another without ceasing, so that you will continue to hope that it can yet offer you something. This is why waking up can feel like failure, because it means abandoning the quest for success as an independent agent. And it's very humiliating to that which tried to build itself up out of nothing into something which was forever an impossibility. Intelligence dawning upon the mind realizes this and doesn't bother to feel guilty and get sidetracked, but immediately chooses for sanity and lets go of the attempt to be something on its own. Continuing, it has been particularly difficult to overcome the ego's belief in the body as an end, because this is synonymous with the belief in attack as an end. The ego has a real investment in sickness. If you are sick, how can you object to the ego's firm belief that you are not invulnerable? You see, being sick isn't real. It's something you have a right to be free of, and it is something you can be free of instantaneously because it isn't real. But the ego needs it to be real so that it can convince you that you are vulnerable and therefore need to defend yourself. And once you take the bait, you're caught on a merry-go-round that goes nowhere but exhausts you. Again, the ego has a real investment in sickness. If you are sick, how can you object to the ego's firm belief that you are not invulnerable? This is a particularly appealing argument from the ego's point of view, because it obscures the obvious attack which underlies the sickness. What's the underlying attack? The belief that you're a body. The belief that you're independent. The belief that you are an orphan and have no source. And that you are what you're experiencing yourself as at the moment, which is a body. The attack is body identification. If you accepted this and also decided against attack, you could not give this false witness to the ego's stand. It is hard to perceive sickness as a false witness, because you do not realize that it is entirely out of keeping with what you want. This witness then appears to be innocent and trustworthy because you have not seriously cross-examined him. Cross-examined sickness. If you did, you would not consider sickness such a strong witness on behalf of the ego's views. A more honest statement would be as follows. Those who want the ego, in other words, those who want to be authorizers, those who want the thrill, the hit of creating meaning out of nothing and making it become truly something, are predisposed to defend it. Therefore, their choice of witnesses should be suspect from the beginning. The ego does not call upon witnesses who would disagree with its case, nor does the Holy Spirit. Nor does the Holy Spirit. We have said that judgment is the function of the Holy Spirit, and one which he is perfectly equipped to fulfill. The ego as a judge gives anything but an impartial judgment. When the ego calls on a witness, it has already made the witness an ally. I'm going to back up. The ego does not call upon witnesses who would disagree with its case. Now, when you are confronted by someone who is identifying himself or herself as a body, and is engaged in defense, being with you as though you are an opponent, whether you're asserting your opposition at the moment or not, you will find that they will not address what's true in you, but they will address any little ego just a moment. Beliefs which you treasure. And of course, these ego beliefs will not be true. And because they are beliefs that you, as an ego, one identifying with the body, treasure, they will call it into question. They will demean it. They will insult it. Why? So as to call out from you an ego witness to the one calling it forth. You may be doing quite well in being clear about the truth. You may be doing quite well in staying in your peace. You may be doing quite well in staying with the Holy Spirit and letting the Holy Spirit reveal to you his perspective, which at the bottom line is your true perspective. An ego in defense approaching you will not want to call forth witnesses for your clarity. The ego will call forth ego dynamics in you that are not yet put to rest. Ego beliefs which you still intend to defend because you treasure them. This is very important to understand, because when this happens, it's an invitation for you to abandon the Holy Spirit or your right mind. It's an invitation for you to crawl back into the crab barrel and react from the old habit of personal self-protection and the old habit of somehow finding a way to be equal to or better than the one challenging you, so that you can, once again, attempt to have the satisfaction of truly being something on your own. The ego of another will never seek in you a witness to that which is in balance in you. And so you must be alert when you find yourself losing your balance and becoming reactive and willingly engaging in defense. Because the ego of another is making an ally of that which isn't even real in you, and that which you really do not wish to re-engage. But that is the way it happens. Continuing, it is still true that the body has no function of itself because it is not an end. You know what? It's a reflection. It's a reflection of the movement of God. It's like the leaves on the trees moving as a reflection of the movement of the wind. The body has no function of itself because it is not an end. The ego, however, establishes it as an end because, as such, it will lose its true function. Its true function of what? Being a means of communication. It causes your attention to become arrested and preoccupied with the body. The ego, however, establishes it as an end because, as such, it will lose its true function. And if it loses its true function, you lose your real or true conscious awareness of who and what you are. And so it's very important to this little imposter, this state of self-defense, defending the existence of something which doesn't exist. This is the purpose of everything the ego does. Its sole aim is to lose sight of the function of everything. A sick body does not make any sense. It could not make sense because sickness is not what the body is for. Sickness is meaningful only if the two basic premises on which the ego's interpretation of the body rests are true. Specifically, these are that the body is for attack, and two, that you are a body. Without these premises, sickness is completely inconceivable. And if it's inconceivable, it's impossible to experience. If you are going to continue to try to maintain this divorce from your source, you are going to be faced with these two premises and these two premises only, that the body is for attack and that you are a body. So, as you proceed in this coming week, once again, have some fun exploring the experience of identifying yourself as mind, the conscious awareness in which every single experience you will have this week will be going on. Which means that every single experience you have this week will be a mental experience, not an independently existing experience of a physical world. You see, considering the body as an end rather than a means means you're arrested at the movement of the acknowledgement of God, the acknowledgement of what is real in everything you're seeing. That movement has become arrested at the point of its expression because you become preoccupied with yourself as a body. So this week, practice not letting your attention become arrested at the body, but let your attention persist in fulfilling the intent to recognize God in everything you see, to extend or give acknowledgement to God in everything you see. Continuing, sickness is a way of demonstrating that you can be hurt. It is a witness to your frailty, your vulnerability, and your extreme need to depend on external guidance. Well, external. External to what? External to the Holy Spirit. That which is nothing more than your right mind, which is, for lack of better words, right in the middle of you. The central core, actually the center and circumference of your being, which is not different from God and is therefore infinite. Continuing, the ego uses this, the need to depend on external guidance, as its best argument for your need for its guidance. It dictates endless prescriptions for avoiding catastrophic outcomes. Now, the Holy Spirit, perfectly aware of the same data, does not bother to analyze them at all. If the data are meaningless, there is no point in considering them. How many of you fuss over the possibilities? How many of you fuss over the nature of the ego that means that you'd better be alert constantly, second-guessing what the ego might do next, taking in, classifying, categorizing ego data, instead of saying, Father, what's the truth? What's really going on here? And I don't mean what's really going on here with all of these ego ploys that are going on all around me, but what is the truth of reality right here? I'm willing to consider the possibility that all of these ego ploys and dynamics that are parading themselves in front of me most vocally and forcefully, I'm willing to consider the possibility that they're not actual, that they're not real, and therefore don't require my attention. And I want to know, Father, what is really going on here? What is the movement of creation that is going on here? and being the non-existence of this ego folderol. Continuing, the function of truth is to collect data which are true. There is no point in trying to make sense out of meaningless data. Any way you handle them results in nothing. The more complicated the results become, the harder it may be to recognize their nothingness. But it is not necessary to examine all possible outcomes to which premises give rise to judge them truly. You can learn to recognize ego ploys, and knowing as you do that the ego is a liar and the father of it, meaning the father of the lie, you will realize that there truly is no useful reason to examine the lies, to understand the lies, to find out the motivation for the lies, and so on. Continuing, a learning device is not a teacher. It cannot tell you how you feel. You do not know how you feel because you have accepted the ego's confusion and you think that a learning device can tell you how you feel. Well, what happened here? Where did this learning device come up? Well, we're talking about the body. And as long as you think you are a body, and that it is an end rather than a means, what it truly is escapes your notice. And therefore, because there is a call for correction, so that you might experience what it truly is and not lose out on the fulfillment of it, it becomes a learning device for you. Whatever of what is real you have obscured from your sight becomes a learning device. It becomes the focal point for correction of perception. The body is not a teacher. A learning device, meaning the body, is not a teacher. No learning device is a teacher. But it is the means by which the correction of misperception can occur. You know what? It doesn't tell you what the truth is, but it makes you want to know what the truth is so that you will open up your mind to the Father or to the Holy Spirit, your right mind, to reveal to you what the truth is. And then what that thing truly is no longer needs to be a learning device for you because you've come back into your right mind. Now, a learning device is not a teacher, and specifically we're talking here about the body. It cannot tell you how you feel. And yet you get up in the morning, don't you, and you check your body to see how you feel. Sometimes you do that to see if maybe you have a justifiable reason for not going into work. So, a learning device is not a teacher. It cannot tell you how you feel. You do not know how you feel because you have accepted the ego's confusion, and you think that a learning device can tell you how you feel. Sickness is merely another example of your insistence on asking the guidance of a teacher who does not know the answer. The ego is incapable of knowing how you feel. When we said that the ego does not know anything, we said the one thing about the ego that is wholly true. The only thing about the ego that is wholly true, it is that it is incapable, is that it does not know anything. But there is a corollary. If knowledge is being, and the ego has no knowledge, then the ego has no being. It's an imposter, a figment of the imagination. But the problem is that that figment of the imagination you believe is real. And so every day you identify yourself as a body. And every day you live in a state of defense. That's your habit. It's a long-standing habit, which we are in the process of breaking. And we're in the process of breaking it by means of your being confronted over and over again with the truth that you are conscious awareness, not a body. That the only thing confronting you is the kingdom of heaven, not a physical universe that came from a big bang. That you are the Christ right now, not the mortal sinner you think you are. That you are in a forever state of invincibility and not vulnerable. That the substance of everything you see is spirit, not matter. And that everything you see is an idea, not a physical form, experienced by mind, and you are that mind. That mind is you. That everything going on is purely mental. And this keeps being presented to you as a means of arousing your curiosity beyond the definitions you've accepted, so that you might dare to let yourself be beyond the definitions of everything that you've accepted, beyond the capacities that you, somewhere along the line, decided had boundaries. You're being invited to let yourself into the fuller conscious experience of being that it's not only your birthright to be experiencing, it's your capacity at the present moment to be experiencing. It's just that you're not pushing the envelope. Continuing, you might well ask how the voice of something which does not exist can be so insistent. Have you seriously considered the distorting power of something you want, even if it is not true? You have had many instances of how what you want can distort what you see and hear. If you want to see an acquaintance or a friend, as mean-spirited, as selfish, or as overgenerous, or unreasonably kind. You will miss what that one is actually being, because you will interpret everything that one does according to the definition you hold. And if you're holding the definition, you want the definition. No one, continuing, no one can doubt the ego's skill in building up false cases. Nor can anyone doubt your willingness to listen until you will not tolerate anything except truth. When you lay the ego aside, it will be gone. The Holy Spirit's voice is as loud as your willingness to listen. And I promise you that as long as you are insisting upon harboring in your mind a definition of your brother or sister that is not true, your willingness to listen for what is true is absent. And the Holy Spirit's voice will not be loud at all to you. Listen to this. It cannot be louder without violating your will. Such respect. It's a little bit more than respect. It's the fact that you walked away from the Father, you divorced your source on purpose, and the only way you can return to your sanity is for your own reasons and because you have your own commitment and you are willing to take responsibility for every step you take on the way home, so that there will be no confusion in your mind. Your arrival at home will be and can only be the result of your own singularity of purpose. Joy, we started out today, is unified purpose, and unified purpose is only God's. When yours is unified, it is His. The Holy Spirit's voice is as loud as your willingness to listen. It cannot be louder without violating your will, which the Holy Spirit seeks to free, but never to command. The Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, teaches you to use your body only to reach your brothers. To reach your brothers, not attack your brothers. The Holy Spirit teaches you to use your body only to reach your brothers, so you can teach His message, the Holy Spirit's message, through you. This will heal them and therefore heal you, because you get to keep what you give. Everything used in accordance with its function, as the Holy Spirit sees it, and this includes the body, cannot be sick. You hear that? Everything used in accordance with its function as the Holy Spirit sees it cannot be sick. Everything used otherwise is. If you identify with the body, you will see the body as an end instead of a means to an end. And sickness, sin, and death will be your experience. If you see it as a means to an end, your body will be incapable, and you therefore will not have the experience of sickness, sin, and death. Do not allow the body to be a mirror of a split mind. Do not let it be an image of your own perception of littleness. Why? Because it's not real? No, because it is real as a means of communication. What? To glorify God. Do not let it, the body, reflect your will to attack. Health is the natural state of anything whose interpretation is left to the Holy Spirit. Your right mind, who perceives no attack on anything. Health is the result of relinquishing all attempts to use the body lovelessly. And let me be very clear about something. When the word health is used here, it means identifiable health. It means the disappearance of sickness. It means the disappearance of blemish, the disappearance of damage. The obvious, I'm going to say, recordable evidence of regeneration. Health is the beginning of the proper perspective on life under the guidance of the one capital T teacher who knows what life is, being the voice for life itself. That voice is the voice for truth, the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, and that which is what you are, mind, not body, mind in which the experience of creation is going on, in which everything that is experienced is recognized as an idea set in place by the will of the Father. Which is the infinitude of your being. So remember again this week. The simple concept is you want to make a shift from body identification to mind identification. Not a tiny pea-brained mind. Even that is a concept. Oh, your mind is in your brain, and your brain is in the skull, and it only weighs a certain number of pounds, which isn't very significant, and therefore it's a small mind. No, that's an interesting idea, isn't it? But not one of you has found the edge of your mind. Pay attention to the obvious. I will say, not all of it is fully illuminated to you at the moment. But But when you have explored the extremities of your mind, you have found you can keep going and going and going like the Energizer Bunny. Pay attention to the obvious, and then take hold of the obvious, and begin to live your life consciously according to the obvious. Let that mind be in you, which was also in me. Why? Why let it? Because it already is. And you might as well stop objecting to it. Let it be in you. Agree with what the Father already set in place. You see? Don't let that mind be in you, which was also in me, because I did it, or because it's a good idea, or it's better than anything else. Do it, because it's the truth about you. It's already been done. It already is you. Do it so that you will be in total internal consistency with yourself instead of at odds with yourself. Do it because it embodies the integrity, the already existing divine integrity of you. Do it because it means coming back home into your right mind so that you might enjoy the fullness of your sanity. I love you, who you really are, already. And I look forward to being with you next week.